Hey, Tom here from The Run Testers, and welcome back to the Points of Shoe podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about super shoes and if they work for everybody, how long you can expect running shoe foams to work for, and what we're talking about when we're explaining shoe sizes. Right, let's dive in and do the questions. Evening.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right, how are you doing?
I'm well.
Not long till the big day now?
No, London is 5 weeks, is it, till London? Bit hectic next couple because it's kids' Easter holidays and a bit travelling, so
yeah,
can't stick in my normal routine, very very annoying. But other than that, all good. Yours is even sooner.
Yeah. Well, I had a race yesterday, not feeling very confident about Boston, and I got to the point now where I'm like, well, there's only, a week and a bit of proper training left, so I don't feel like I'm going to make any big advancements in that period.
Do you think it's helped to do a really hard trail marathon and then the Hastings half marathon with loads of elevation just before your big race?
I tell you what, the Hastings half marathon was perfect training for Boston because it has a... It must have been a 3K downhill and a 3K uphill.
Like Boston's steady. Hills aren't that like that at all.
There's a really long downhill, though, isn't there?
Yeah, okay. It's not 3K, I don't think, is it?
Oh, I don't know, but hard. I think people talk about it really hitting the quads hard, and I've never heard anyone talk about marathon that hits the quads hard.
Yeah, I mean, relative to other marathons, but I mean, that the profile of Hastings looks... I think you had a lot more elevation in that than you have in the whole of Boston, I thought.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But it's, I reckon it might be perfect training for it.
Okay. All right. Go on. Yeah. Maybe you'll smash it then. It should be more confident then, Tom.
I'm not going to smash it. I'm
just gonna... We'll see what the weather's like. You might get a tailwind all the way. You never know.
Yeah. Could get lucky. Well, I still not decided on the shoe.
I thought you were doing Endorphin Pro.
Just not sure at the moment.
We're still going to do, I'm still panicking. I mean, I've picked the Metaspeed Sky Paris and it's going to take something pretty magical from the Alpha Fly to bring me back to it now. But I'm going to do a workout in the Alpha Fly this week. And then maybe I've got London Landmarks half, but I wasn't probably going to race that because it's only 2 weeks before London. So I don't really know. Might be a marathon paced effort instead.
It's a smarter move because I suppose you've won it before. So your competitive streak will come in.
I don't know. I'll talk to my coach about it. Well, I did Plessy 2 weeks before Berlin. Remember that? And that ended up being a pretty much an all-out effort just because it was hot. Not as hot as it was last year, but it was still pretty hard.
Yes. Oh, I miss Plessy.
Sign up, mate. Oh, no, it's probably not open yet. I did a very similar half marathon yesterday in Brentwood. Very fun half marathon out in Essex. Actually, a lot hillier than Plessy.
Yes. Yeah. No, I miss flatter half marathons in the countryside.
Yeah, there's nothing around this time. Yeah, I mean, Hastings was very hilly. I think Fleet was yesterday. That's quite hilly as well.
There we go. All right, do you want to do some questions?
Yeah, that's what we're here for. It's Points of Shoe after all. This isn't just chats with Tom and Nick, is it?
No, nobody wants that. That's going to ruin people's day. Yeah. Right, so we've got quite a few questions now. I've had to vet some of these because some of them are massive and... It's just so many elements to some of these questions.
One question, guys. It's like the GP. You can only go in with one problem.
So let's do this one. So Ian says, love the podcast and the YouTube channel.
Cheers,
Ian. Thank you very much. That's how you start it. That's good. Yeah, yep. You got me hooked. You said on the Q&A pod that you use old racing shoes for hard interval workouts. I wonder if it's better to use an unplated shoe for intervals, forcing me to work harder and then have the pleasant boost on race day. What's your take and why?
I have thought about this in the past, and certainly I think opinions on either side are, broadly speaking, I don't think it matters very much would be my take on that. I think you probably will work a bit harder, obviously, in a non-plated shoe. Maybe that's good, but you're probably going to get closer to your race day feeling by using a plated shoe and maybe get a confidence boost or maybe run faster and getting a better effect that way. So I would say go with what you want to on the day is probably all right. I think overusing plated shoes, maybe there's an element of injury risk there. I know people are a bit worried about that. Nothing's too conclusive yet. But I don't think in terms of the boost on race day, I think the boost on race day comes less from shoes and comes from tapering and crowds rather than anything else. Mm-hmm. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because I think I use plated shoes in training really just because my training is based on pacing. So if I've got to do a 26K run that has elements of it that are at 4 minute kilometer pace or something like that, and I know that session is going to be hard, I wear a plated shoe so that I can hit that pacing. because it's very specific. So I know that if it gives more of a chance for me to consistently hit that pacing than if I'm going with a shoe that isn't giving me those performance benefits. What I have done interval sessions for this marathon block using all sorts of shoes because I've had loads of shoes to test. Mm. And what I find is if I use a shoe that isn't particularly fast or isn't a super shoe, I mean, I've used some like easy day shoes for intervals because I wanted to test out what the shoe was like.
Yeah.
And I didn't enjoy it as much. And I found it a lot harder. And I don't think I'd have maintained the pace that I wanted to over that session. So I think from a training perspective, I don't think it makes a massive difference because you're either going to go a bit faster or a bit slower depending on the shoe, and you're going to get the same level of training benefit from it. But I think from a mental aspect of it, just enjoying that run more, especially if you've got a really long run, it's just nicer to have a pair of shoes on that you feel faster in.
Yeah, and also if you are doing hard workout, you are going to recover quicker if you use a plated shoe. And you know, yes, it's always interesting to see what it might be interesting to ask our coaches if they're setting paces. I use pace as well. If they're setting paces based on us using carbon shoes, but it's like the same way. Like if I get a hard run, yeah, I'll put on a speedy pair of shoes and I'll go to a flat area near me. And like, I suppose in the early days of my coaching, I just walk out the door and run, and it would be this is really hard. I'm not hitting the paces. Well, it's because you've just run a random hilly course and stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
So when you start getting really serious and you get all these planned runs, you go out there to, you know, you fuel like you're going to do it properly. You go find an area that's relatively flat because you want to achieve the workout. But yeah, like you say, even if you don't achieve the workout, you're probably going to get a good training effect, but definitely the mental benefits doing it are good.
Yeah. So in answer to your question, that's not very conclusive, is it? But we don't think it makes a massive difference unless you are really specifically got to hit a pace that you need to do.
I'd say specifically on the thing for the boost on race day, I don't think it would make a difference to me if I play Tuesday non-plated shoe than a race day use a plated shoe. I don't think that would be the boost I'm feeling. I think tapering is the boost, basically, because training is very tiring and I'll have tapered and suddenly I'll be a lot fresher.
Exactly. And we haven't talked about the debate around using carbon plate shoes all the time because we don't know. It's a difficult one to talk about, isn't it? Like, you know, does it make you more injured and things? You just don't know. There's probably research suggests, you know, that it might be the case, but it's not really our area of expertise.
No, yeah. And I probably won't use them for easy runs just because they're easy run shoes to test, which don't have plates in.
And we have lots and lots of shoes, but people who buy expensive carbon plate shoes probably don't want to use those for training in because it's going to be very expensive. Okay, let's move on to another one. So this is from Michael. First of all, I really like your podcast. Good. Very good. Keep those comments coming in at the start of these emails because we'll definitely read them first. So he says, I'm always a bit cautious when it comes to the size of running shoes. You often say the shoe fits true to size and that you go with your normal running shoe size. But what is the normal size in running shoes compared to the shoes you wear in everyday life? Do you go up a whole size?
This is a big question we get a lot. And I think it's important to say at this point, I don't have any shoes that aren't running shoes. I only wear running shoes. Right. So my normal running is also, but when I did wear like smart shoes, when I have to go to a wedding or a funeral, for example, I will wear a shoe that is half a size smaller than my running shoe size in the UK, that is. Mm-hmm. But I have two feet that are slightly different sizes. So, you know, shoes always fit a bit different to me. But I know some people who go with their normal dress shoe size, even for running shoes. You do that, Tom, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always a size 8 and everything.
Yeah. So, but I think the norm is to go half a size up from dress shoes to your running shoes, because you generally need a bit more room in running shoes and it's appreciated. So that's why I started saying normal running shoe size, because I thought that was maybe a more widely understood term than true to size. But true to size is a complicated thing. And we always get questions about size. It's an unbelievably complicated thing. So now I say normal size for that brand, because UK sizes are different US sizes, which is not helpful at all. But in general, I think go half size up on your normal running shoes. But if you're really concerned about this, I really think you need to go to a running shoe shop, because that is the only way you'll really alleviate your fears, is to go and actually put a shoe on.
Yes.
Because we can tell you what we want in the video, but like I say, I have feet that are 2 feet of slightly different sizes. We each like different amounts of room sometimes in our shoes. So
yeah. It's a tricky one, and we get so many comments about it, because some people in the commenting community have very strict rules about how they think these things work. So there has to be an exact amount of size between the big toe and the top of the shoe and things. I don't think that's the case. I wear all my shoes in size 8, and generally I base it on the principle that when I review a shoe, I'll say I've got this in my UK size in that shoe. And if it's too small for me, then that's quite an easy comparison to make for the shoes. If you start then going, okay, this size should be an 8.5 in comparison, then it's more confusing than just saying, this is just a UK size 8, it's slightly smaller. It's a very difficult one to get right. The other thing as well is that when you go up in shoe size, so 6, 6.5, 7, there's that's not absolute. So some people are just over into the, you know, the smaller size of that. Some people are at the longer size of that. So it's not a comparable. It's not like millimeters. You don't have a millimeter foot size. It's there's only a few sizes you can get. So just using your foot size is quite a tricky one to say, you know, it's the exact thing that everybody should do with that foot size.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. It's like I say, my feet are something size. So basically, probably my left foot would be happy nearly always in a UK 8.5. But my right foot, if it's a small UK 8.5, that will be too small. So that's why I always get a size 9. So sometimes the shoes end up quite a bit bigger than they need to be on my left size. But it's like, well, yeah, okay, but I'll just take that into account. And so usually I say, you know, if you're on the middle, if you're someone like me who's on the fence between two sizes, I say which one to go for. But probably I could do it all in US sizing. It might be a bit easier just because I'm a more clear kind of US 9.5, I think. But then even then I need US 10 in quite a lot of shoes. So basically the point is, probably half a size up in your dress shoe size, but maybe not because Tom doesn't care about that.
Well, the thing that I would say is that I always wear a size 8, I test hundreds of running shoes over the course of the year. I very, very rarely have any issues with shoe size. I'm all very, find them very comfortable. I don't get any rubbing or anything like that. And we do get people coming on the channel saying that I wear my shoes too small.
Yeah, Tom wears his shoes too small.
I wear my shoes too small.
He's constantly in pain, but he won't admit it.
But whenever I see that, I think, well, I've never had a problem with any of these shoes I wear. So it can't, there's a level of preference to it that I like. That's the room I need. So it's tricky. But I think in general, it's safe to say that people probably do size up half a size in running shoe size, but also probably a bit more in trail shoe sizes as well, because people say that you need a bit of extra space.
Yeah, then the problem with that is that brands know that, so they make the trail shoe sizes bigger for that.
Yes.
So like Saucony's Endorphin Edge was massive. Remember that?
Yeah.
But probably I also will get a shoe thinking, I know it's going to be a bit big here, but it's better to be safe because I can't get a sample that's necessarily the right size, and then I'm just testing a shoe that's too big, which is always fine. But also we both have quite narrow feet, which I mean loads of shoes just work for us okay.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to be, so if you have a wide foot, you probably have more problems with fit in general, I think.
So general rule is if you're concerned, go and try them on, because you're never going to know 100% if it's going to fit perfectly.
And I would say if you can't get, because sometimes running shoes don't carry like the latest and greatest super trainers and super shoes, go and test a shoe from that brand somewhere, because brands are usually, apart from New Balance, who are wacky with their sizing sometimes, brands are pretty consistent to each within their own range usually.
Yeah.
And that's why I usually say it's the right size, same size I have for this brand and other shoes.
Okay. Good. Right. So Claire has emailed. I think we can only really answer one of these, but she says, love what you do. Thank you very much. I'm running London Marathon for the first time this year for St. John's Ambulance, and I'm very excited. Good luck. I have small, wide, hobbity feet, and I've struggled to find comfortable running shoes forever. I've just got a pair of wide Hocker Mach 5, and they are okay, still a bit tight. I have two questions. One, is there any pair of marathon shoes suitable for extra wide feet? No idea. It's a really tricky one.
New Balance make wide sizing, I think, usually. Mm. I would say of all the Hoka shoes, the Mach is probably the most narrow at this point, so you probably could try a different Hoka shoe.
Yeah. If you're going for, you've picked the hardest brand to get. I mean, they do have wide versions of them, but they are naturally quite narrow.
Brooks are quite wide, but actually, that said, the Hyperion Max isn't that wide.
Tricky one, isn't it? You can't really base it on the brand, because sometimes they do have fairly wide ones.
I would say if you are a woman, I would look at the men's shoe, because they make it on a wider last potentially. So you could get the exact shoe you want, you already got, and try on a men's version. I did that. I think I recommended that to a member of my family, and it worked out really well because they really liked a shoe, and the women's was a bit too narrow and the men's was spot on.
Okay. That might be interesting, but definitely go and try them on. And then would the Mach 5s be okay to run London in? If they fit you comfortably, it would probably be a fine shoe to run London in.
Great shoe. It's usually the Mach and the Rebel are based, and the New Balance Rebel are our top plate-free marathon shoes, aren't they? Generally, we always think they're really good options if you want to run a marathon, reasonably briskly, but don't want to use a plated shoe. Great shoe.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit less cushioning on the Mach series than you might get on some of the shoes that people want to wear, run marathons in. I wouldn't mind running the marathon in Hoka Mach 5s, but I would like a little bit more cushioning if I was running a whole marathon.
You would. I wouldn't. I've done a You'd hard right, 20 miler in the Mach 5 or 4 and loved it.
Okay, let's have a look at... This one is from Molly and Scott. So they're saying chest strap or watch for monitoring performance. I can't quite understand the rest of this email, but let's base it on that.
Chest strap or watch?
Yeah.
I assume monitoring performance of heart rate, I guess.
They've, at the end, they've got cardio and weight sessions too, basically whatever workout type I do.
But just to measure heart rate. I mean, a strap is more accurate. I use a chest strap. Because if I do any kind of, I know what heart rate I should be in for effort. I don't tend to use heart rate that much, but I will check it to make sure I haven't inadvertently changed my effort levels. But yeah. But I also do some training sessions to heart rate, and I would only ever use a chest strap for that. I wouldn't trust a watch.
Yeah, I it just depends on how much you need that information. I'd say if you desperately want to know the exact heart rate that you've got, so you've got the more accurate information, then fine, wear it. But if I get a chest strap, but I don't care enough about this. I find the stats on my watch fine for the level of information that I need for any of my training. So
you don't do sessions to heart rate, do you, generally?
No.
Yeah.
No.
So if you, once you do that, I think it changes what you need. But if you're not doing that, then yeah, the watch should probably be fine.
Okay. Mark says, I've been running in the Sky Plus for the last 18 months. Which you'd have to pry off my cold, dead feet for something else. And I'm on my second pair.
Nice.
Due to a very recent medical condition, my gait on my right foot has changed and I've gone from a very neutral stride to pronating and slipping laterally in this shoe after 8 miles. So he's not asking us for information on his injury. What he's actually asking is, can you recommend a snappy carbon shoe with slightly more stability?
This is big question we get a lot. And I've got some experience with this because I had a mate who had this exact question, and we basically tried doing all of my carbon shoes. And this was a couple of years back, so different generations. And basically, the scale was the more stable it was, the less super it was, to the point when he said, I wouldn't bother wearing this because it doesn't feel like a super shoe anymore, even though it is more stable. I'd say these days, I think the Brooks Hyperion Elite 4 is pretty stable, but that does come at the cost of the fact it's not very bouncy and responsive and exciting compared to other super shoes, but still a quick shoe. We always rate the Endorphin Pro as quite a natural shoe, fairly wide, potentially more stable than others, and I think my mate has agreed with that, who does need it. So I think that'll be one up, that'll be right up there for me. Don't know about you, Tom, but it's the Hoka Rocket X is quite a grounded feel, but it is a soft foam. I wouldn't say it's stable, really.
No, it's not. I think you're getting that. I think even the Endorphin Pro 4 is actually a bit more with that HG foam. It's a little bit more stable than the Pro 3 for me. So I think that's a good option. Did you say Puma?
Which Puma? The DV8 Nitro Elite?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad actually because it's pretty natural. Yeah, pretty normal feeling shoe, but it does give you a bit of punch and it's light. That could be a good option. Very cheap these days as well.
Firmer midsole. Yeah.
Basically, none of them are wide. At all with the base, and that means you're just going to spill over that middle section on them because Cielo X1 from Hoka has a winged plate to try and add stability. It doesn't look like it's going to be stable at all. Maybe that could be unexpectedly a little bit stable because it has got that winged plate to try and add a bit. But yeah, I'd say the Puma's not a bad shout. The Endorphin Pro is not a bad shout. I would maybe try start with those. I wouldn't have said the Metaspeed Sky Plus would have been one of the least stable, though. I think that's probably in the middle of the pack. So that's already, if that's not stable enough, that's a concern, yeah.
Tricky one, yeah. It's an age-old question, isn't it? We often, we answered that question a while ago, which was about, will there ever be stability super shoes? which is sort of the completely opposite, aren't they, of what we get with
So you could look at something like the Adidas Takumi set. I mean, it's not a stable shoe, but it's a lower stack shoe. I don't think your foot would move around so much in it. It's very narrow, but maybe just the fact it's lower stack might help, and it's not the softest foam in the world either. So,
yeah. Okay. So Matt has said, this is quite a good question, actually, and something that does crop quite a bit. I have a question about how you review shoes. Do you recommend a shoe based specifically on your ability as a runner or how you would expect it to perform for all runners? For example, if you were to recommend a shoe as good, for marathon paced efforts and your marathon pace was 4 minutes per K, would you expect someone whose marathon pace was 5 minutes per K to have the same experience? Or should I look at a shoe you might recommend for slower paces if your slower efforts were closer to their marathon pace? That'll do. I'll do the, I'll look at the other bit in a second. Right.
There's probably different philosophies on this out there, but I review shoes on the basis for everyone, but I would expect if people know roughly what I like now, they probably could see some similarities in shoes they like. But if I say a shoe is good for fast running, I mean anyone's fast pace. So when you run fast, I think you run differently. No matter what your actual speed is, you run in a different way. You run with a different gait, with more purpose. You probably land a little bit differently. You turn your feet over quicker. So I say, yeah, if I say a shoe's good for fast pace, I mean it's good for everyone's fast pace. If a shoe's good for slow pace, my slow pace might be your marathon pace, but the point is we're both running easy, we're both shuffling along, and that means the shoe I think is good for everything. So yeah, we review on the basis for everyone. Like, we can't make recommendations on some things, like stability we're a bit not so sure about, but if I say a shoe is good for beginners, that's what I mean. It's reviewing it for everyone, really.
Yes, I think it's a, I think there's a couple of different ways of looking at these shoes when you pick up the pace. So if you are a runner that is at a level where you going from your jogging pace to going to your faster pace essentially tips you over onto your toes, which is what happens with most people at a certain speed, then I think most shoes that we review would probably apply to everyone who's doing that. If you are a runner that is maybe running at, I don't know, 8 minute kilometers or something, and you up your pace to 7 minute kilometers, it's very unlikely that you're going to be going onto your toes to do that. So you might actually not get the benefits of shoes that really have, like, you know, maybe a rolling action or some sort of propulsion from the front of the shoe.
Well, you're still moving through your footstool. I mean, I don't go onto my toes when I go until I sprint.
Yeah. Of course, you don't do that at all, do you?
Most runners don't change their gait that much. They don't suddenly become 4 foot strikers until they're actually sprinting. It's only...
Right.
It's more that you might land it, but you might take more steps. You're striding. You might move slightly more midfoot if you're a heel striker, but you wouldn't just go onto your toes at all.
Okay. So if you're going from an 8 minute kilometer to a 7 minute kilometer, there's not much that's going to change in that, though, is there? It's just a slight bit of cadence.
Well, it depends what that. If an 8 minute kilometer is flat out easy, and a 7 minute is, you know, it's fast, you will change a fair bit. Like, your arm drive changes, how fast you kick your legs behind you will change, how many steps you take, how long your stride. So everyone increases their stride length and their cadence when they run fast. It's the Oiasics thing. And you increase both of those when you run quick, and you probably land a different way. You put more force into a shoe and stuff like that. So I think it'd be like, some people might change more from slow to fast, but I don't think you really change your gait like that much. Like, this idea that, you know, once you start running fast, you might start hitting different parts of the shoe a little bit, I think a bit, but you don't watch wildly change your gait, I don't think.
Okay. Well, I suppose one of the things for us to point out is that one of the reasons that we have lots of different runners reviewing shoes is so that you do get a bit of an idea of how it responds for those different people. So if you look at, if we all reviewed, say, the Nike Vaporfly, you would be running, you'll be testing it at a pace of, what, 3 10-minute kilometers, something like that.
Right.
And then that would all the way go down to, 4 30-minute kilometers or maybe further. So we do try to sort of test the same shoe out over different paces for different people who run at different speeds. And that should give you a bit of an idea on how it responds for different people. And I think sometimes we do pick up on things that you might like a shoe more than other people, because I think an example was a video we did the other day where we were talking about the Glycerin and the Triumph.
Yeah.
And you talked about how you preferred the Glycerin because it was a bit more responsive.
I found it easier to get pop out of the midsole on that shoe. I think it gives me more back, whereas I think the Triumph, I don't think I put necessarily enough weight into it to really get the foam to liven up.
yeah. But I much prefer the Triumph for the paces that I'm running at, because I don't think I'm really benefiting from the responsiveness.
I wonder if it's, but then it comes to the idea of whether it's the pace or the way we run, because we run slightly different ways. Yeah. You are probably got a little bit more muscle and
more muscle than you.
And you bound along a bit more. So there's things like this. So I always think with super shoes, like, so we test all these shoes, right? We test our different race paces. We do usually agree a fair bit in what shoes perform well, even if we're running at quite different paces, because that's our fast pace and we're all quite, we're all quite well-trained runners. We've run a lot of time. We tend to mostly do structured training, that kind of thing. So I think that is probably one big difference to someone maybe who's coming in as a complete beginner, you know, who hasn't done that kind of structured training, maybe doesn't know their paces and that kind of thing. But broadly, we're reviewing for all runners. and there's differences in gait and style and preference. Preference is also massive, which I think is why it's good to, you know, everyone knows now, by now, Tom is obsessed with very cushioned shoes. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, the other of us don't like them quite as much, probably. So, yeah, and I like a nice narrow, nimble shoe because I've got narrow feet. Yeah, so it's preference. But I broadly speaking, I think it's overstated how much pace is involved. Because if I look around at my pace in a marathon, people have a massive range of shoes if they're not just wearing the Vaporfly, which everyone usually is. But if they don't like the Vaporfly the most because of their pace.
I do think there's a limit on it, though. So I think when we're talking about runners increasing their pace and training using a shoe, if you are a complete beginner and you maybe, you know, you've got to 1 kilometer or something like that, even you going at a faster pace is probably not going to benefit from the shoes in the same way that we're talking about benefiting from the shoes.
No, yeah, because you're probably not running at an actual fast pace for you because you just haven't unlocked that within yourself, I guess. Yeah. And also the way your running gait forms over time, I think. So, you know, if you've just started running, like you're just running and it's, you know, your body knows what it's doing, you're not going to fall over. But I think over time you get hardened into certain rhythms and patterns, and that's when, you know, you can actually start to see shoes that suit you a bit more. Yeah. But yeah, if you went out right now and run as fast as you could, you know, like 10 years ago, that would be a completely different speed and style. Because, that's what I mean by if you are a well-trained runner, I think you probably hone everything a bit more. No matter what your pace is, you've run a lot, you kind of know how you're going to move a bit more, maybe. Right, it's all speculation, though. None of us are experts on this.
Just point that out, that we're not experts in most of these answers. So just giving you our view. Okay, so Mike here says, been following the channel for a good amount of time now. And he's recently been exploring finding shoes on eBay.
Good question.
Due to life being expensive with a small family, is it worth trying eBay for a bargain? I recently found some Vaporflies 1 and 2 with around 16 miles on them at a reasonable price. Would you just wait and get brand new or trust the untrustworthy?
I bought a pair of shoes off eBay and it was perfectly fine. You can get ones that have that guarantee thing where they send them to a certifier before they send them on to you, which is a good idea to do, I think. But basically, I think if a deal is too good to be true, it will be too good to be true. If you see the Vaporfly and it's, say, 130 quid, that's quite a good deal. It's probably a real shoe. If it's there for £16, that's not going to be a real Vaporfly, is it? Unless it's really battered. I would say eBay is a perfectly good place to buy shoes these days. eBay's so, I think it's quite regulated these days and everything. It looks like a shop when you go in. It's very hard to actually find good deals, I think, on there. I think Vinted, now that's the Wild West. That's where you want to be going to find shoe deals, and then you might get stuck a bit. But I think Vinted is actually pretty really good value for shoes in the UK. I don't know if that's in the US, to be honest. But I bought shoes off eBay, was perfectly happy, got my Alphafly ones off them in the color I wanted. You don't know necessarily how they've been stored, I guess, is one risk. But
were they new when you got them, or were they secondhand?
Yeah, brand new, and they were certified on the way.
So there's probably a bit of a difference between getting brand new ones is just a risk, isn't it? Are they real? Are they not? Secondhand ones are going to be real more often than not because somebody's used them.
It's how much they've used them,
used them. So that's the tricky bit. If you're buying a pair of, I think if you were buying a pair of Brooks Glycerins that had 30 miles in them, you're pretty safe. Like they're going to feel exactly the same as.
Even if they've under-egged that and it's actually 60 miles, it's still going to be fine.
It'll be fine for what you do. If you were to buy the Alphafly 3s and it says 20 miles on them, that might not be accurate. It might be like 40 miles, and 40 miles in the Alphafly 3s is probably slightly noticeable when you start running in them.
So that's when you're going to want a significant discount. But at the end of the day, that's going to be... I think with carbon shoes, you can get a decent deal. I'd say looking at previous gens, you can. I think the idea, you're not going to find an amazing deal, I don't think, basically on there. Because I looked and you ended up, you know, you work out the minimum price that people actually really accept, and it's something. But you could get a pretty battered pair for a good price, I'm sure. And I still imagine they'll still be quite good. But I think almost there's definitely a case. In the UK, so this is where it's last Black Friday, we'd looked for lots on the website I write for quite a lot. We were looking for deals constantly on carbon shoes. And in the UK, there were phenomenal deals on carbon shoes. Everything was there. Everything was included. If you had a bit of time and you were diving in, you could find any shoe at a decent price. In the US, there was not a single deal on carbon shoes, except randomly on Amazon, there was an old New Balance SC Elite in a lemon color. So in the UK, I think sales periods, you can actually clean up. And if you go to, sports shoes, Pro Direct Running, and you get lucky on your size, you can get a shoe for under 100 quid, even a pretty new racing shoe. Yeah. But I would say, I think with eBay, it's probably something you just learn. You probably start to learn and get experienced at buying the shoes at it.
Yeah, and there's probably a there's a bit in it, which is the shoe that you're trying to get. Like, if you're trying to get an Alpha Fly 3 on eBay, and you're probably not going to get it that much cheaper. And in reality, you don't really need it. There's other shoes that you can get which are just as. I bang on about it all the time. I prefer the Alpha Fly 1 to the Alpha Fly 3. If you're trying to get a Vaporfly 1 for like £35, that's a different thing altogether. That's probably a nice, good. That's a good deal if it's coming in at that price and it's only got like 16 miles on it.
So the big thing with the ratio is, right, there's no, if you're already worrying about it, you're always going to worry about it, and you're going to worry about using that shoe for racing. You're going to end up buying another shoe. So if you're never going to get out of your own head out of it, it's never going to be a good deal. So that would be the risk I'd have. But so it's a hard one, but there's definitely good value on eBay, but I actually don't think the value is that good on eBay.
I don't trust it in the slightest. I've never bought any. The only thing I buy on eBay is retro computer games. I never buy any clothes off eBay.
I don't buy any clothes off eBay, no. I don't buy much on eBay, to be honest, apart from Garmin straps.
you do that quite a lot.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one final one. This is from Carl. He says, this is a tricky one, actually, and I'm interested to know if you actually know much about this. I'm wondering what your opinion is about buying race shoes and keeping them on the shelves for months without using them. Of course, they need to be taken care of by sparing them for race day, but would you say there's a limit for how long you can keep them unused? I'm curious because I think there are such good race shoes on the market at the moment, and I would like to secure myself a pair before they get sold out. It's a good question because we talk about this quite a lot, where we're sort of when shoes are at the end of their sale life, Alpha Fly 1s, Saucony Dolphin Pro 3s, probably soonish, and you love those shoes, do you just stockpile them so that you've got them then and there? So if you stockpile two pairs of shoes and then never get around to wearing them for 2 years, have you wasted the opportunity to use them shoes because the foams are deteriorating?
So I did ask an expert this once for an article. I just Googled the article to remember her answer. And the problem is her answer is based on traditional EVA, which not a lot of shoes use these days. And she said basically it would reduce the lifespan of the shoe. It wouldn't change the performance necessarily, but it might. She reckoned it would probably knock like 50 to 100 miles off the lifespan, which is a hard thing to understand. But basically stored foams do degrade a little, but I think it's negligible. I would, as long as you're not storing it somewhere weird or wet and it's in the, you know, it's got like the little bits in there to gather any moisture and stuff like that, I would be amazed if it affected the shoe materially over time. Once you start using it, I think if you then store it, that might be a bit more of a problem potentially, but I think there probably is degradation. I mean, according to this expert, you might lose a bit off the lifespan, but it probably wouldn't change performance. But I wouldn't think it's a problem. I just think if you're the kind of person who loves running shoes so much that you stock up and buy loads of pairs to store to use later, almost certain that you're going to find another shoe you love loads afterwards and then never go back and use those shoes.
I have got quite a few pairs that I stockpiled and then they're fresh and I've got better pairs now.
So
going back to them.
I think unless you're going to stockpile and then never watch your running shoe review again, which would be terrible for the channel, but that would be the way to do it, because I always think like, oh, I can't wait to get back in that shoe. And then by the time it comes around, I've actually got an opportunity to get back in that shoe. Something else is exciting and I want to get back in a different shoe.
And it's quite noticeable. Sometimes as shoe lines develop, you look back on it and go, that was the best version. I love that version. It was the best thing I ever wore. And then I've had it with a couple of shoes over the past year where I've had old versions, well, like the Peg Turbo 2 and things like that, where I pulled it out and gone, oh, actually, it's not as good as I remember it, because shoes do develop and get accustomed to the new things. And it's very difficult now, because if you take a shoe that is released this year and go for running it, and then take a shoe that was released 4 years ago and go for running it, it does feel different. There's definitely a different ride to it. And maybe don't stockpile them.
No, you may get one extra pair and go straight into them. But also, you remember that you might have amazing memories of the shoe, but it might just have been a great period in your running life where you were very fit and killing it. And it's like when you go on holiday and you drink lager, you know, on a beachfront somewhere, and you go, this is amazing. This is the best lager anyone's ever made. Why don't they sell this in England? You I'll find it in England. And you come back and go, no, it's just a terrible lager that was good because I was on holiday in a nice place, relaxed. It's like, So the shoes might just be a reminiscent of your halcyon days as a runner. And that's why I still get loads of people telling me the Vaporfly 4% can't be beaten, because it was the first super shoe they had. It was the best feeling they've ever had on the run.
And also you've got the side, which is there's no shortage of shoes getting reduced significantly these days. It comes around quite a lot. So there's quite often look at Black Friday. You get to Black Friday, there'll be like 10 shoes that are reduced. Yeah. Everyone buys everything there. And then within a year, you've got another one. And then you can get the next generation cheaper. So yeah, it is tempting. But in terms of the actual degradation of the foam, it's probably not a major worrying point.
Yeah. It all goes back to my main advice, which is always the case. If you're looking for running shoes, you find yourself a couple of shoes you're going to use, and then you stop watching reviews until those shoes are gone. And if you like them, you buy them again. You don't watch any more reviews.
Yes.
Because all it does is make you buy more shoes. And that's what I would do if I wasn't constantly in the market of reviewing shoes.
All right, I think I'll do it. That was good. Some good questions from the audience.
Yeah, that was great. Please send in, keep sending them in. It's nice to have them come in. So
These are perfect examples of what we're looking for, ones that we can really chat through. So if you're listening to this, then and you have a question, send it to team@theruntesters.com and put points of shoe in the subject line, and myself and Nick will pick it up as soon as we see it, because we love doing the Points of Shoe podcast. We love chatting about running shoes.
It's a good podcast. It's relaxed. Yeah.
It's relaxed, isn't it? Other than that, we'll catch you next time on the podcast.
Yeah, might be after our marathons by then. No, we might get another. Let's do a send a load of marathon shoes questions in and we'll do another podcast.
Yeah, we'll do a marathon special. If you're listening to this and you have a question, just make one up. We'll do another one before we do our marathons. Cool. All right. Catch you later.
See you later.
Bye. Bye. This episode of the podcast was presented by Tom Wheatley and Nick Harris-Fry. The music was by Fear of Tigers.